afternoon. Why am I sounding so excited? I mean, in the face of everything that's going on, Abby. Someone asked me that question a few seconds back. I was running upstairs, and I'm like, oh. And then I was talking to someone, and I'm like, oh, your voice should not be sounding so excited. I'm like, come on, guys. What are we going through now that we haven't gone through before, yeah? So it's all good. It's all good. Thank you so much for staying with 95.1 Nigeria Info, and welcome to Hard Facts. My name is Kimberly. Much you can call me Kim, or the Oracle. Sahel is in here. I'm sure if you listen to the Morning Crossfire show, he was with Dr. Femi D on the Morning Crossfire show. Femi will be going on leave next week or two. And so Femi, LFEs will be sitting in on the Morning Crossfire show. So for some weeks now, I will be flying solo. But you gave me tons of support yesterday, and I'm confident you're going to be with me from now to the end of the show. There is so much to look at. And incredible guest that will join me today. I was talking with Dr. Nya. She says today is Luxtera Day. Because we're having Majid here, who is the tech team lead, Luxtera Leadership Foundation. And then we're going to have Dr. Inya Ude come after, just immediately after the show with you, as we'll be looking at nation building and, yes, obligations of Nigerians just after the round table. So it's going to be an incredible day, starting from this conversation till the very end. Majid Zahiro, thank you so much. And welcome to the round table.
Thank you very much.
You know, I'm afraid to ask you how you're coping with the fuel situation and all, because I don't know, Barrister Swat might help you with 20 liters since the billionaire is not here.
Yeah, really.
She knows people. She's high up there. You too? Do you know where I was coming out from when I started driving like a maniac? I mean, the queue, I was just counting a few cars. I say, what's the worst that can happen if I stay back off this queue? But I just had to leave.
Wow.
I had to come out there. It's crazy, really.
Really, really crazy.
It is. And you know, yesterday we couldn't stop talking about the national grid. I mean, within 24 hours, we heard it fail twice. But when I was leaving my neighborhood about noon today, Gorimpanzis, light came. There was no light all through yesterday.
Maybe they were stunned.
Maybe.
The grid. So, well.
Yeah.
These are trying times, really.
With age-long problems,
yes,
apparently.
Really.
That at this point in time, you know, I listened to two people talk. We were talking, and I said, well, it seemed like at this point you should have just gotten used to it. Every now and again, this presents itself, so we should just get used to it. But there's no getting used to not having certain things as basic as this. I mean, if you're looking at Abraham Maslow's hierarchy of needs, we're still at the bottom of that pyramid.
We are the bottom of the pyramid of human evolution itself. So what you have is just a function of the dysfunctionality and the root of our nationhood or lack of it, really. So you don't expect anything better than we're getting today.
Oh well, we'll just continue to hope for the best, and like people say, get your PVC and make sure you vote in the right people. But someone asked me, actually sent a mail to me. We had a conversation last week. I think it was just shortly after the round table with you. I went back and I saw a mail, and then he was saying that you keep talking about voting the right people in. People voted people they believed were the right people with all it takes to run the affairs of the country. But certain things are still not going right. So it's not as if there's a sign on anybody's forehead to say, I'm the right person to fix Nigerian problem. From one government after another, you just hope for the best.
That's why we need to pay attention and interrogate the candidates further. But again, like I've always insisted, we as a people must have a baseline agenda for national rebirth. The most important thing is to kill identity politics at this point of our national development. The truth is, some of our choices in the past have been guided by ethnic and religious identity. We must agree to give this up. And in doing this, we will now need to begin to first judge fellow Nigerians, not by where we are coming from or where we worship, but by the content of our character, through the prism of rationality and objectivity, to say, look, this person has the solution to this problem. It doesn't matter if I do not worship in the same church or mosque or not speak the same language with him originally, but he has a solution to my own needs, my security and welfare needs. within a legitimate framework of national development. That's what I'm saying. So we need to move away and make that conscious decision. Let's no longer allow ourselves to be guided or guarded by the rigidity of ethnicity and religion. It's a problem. We need to move away from that, first and foremost. If we do not, we will keep electing people based on this sentiment and expecting good governance, which will not come. Mm. It shouldn't come. So it has to be a deliberate and conscious effort now that ordinarily should be aided by the political parties. You see, the political parties have their responsibility to mobilize Nigerians along these lines. But unfortunately, our political parties are not really, really functioning and living up to their expectations. Most of them actually right now.
Yeah.
Enmeshed in parties within the parties about who gets what, when and how. We still build the same sentiment we're talking about. So I don't know. We just need to pull ourselves up and do the needful. And that's why we advocated for a reformed electoral process that will enable us, in case we make that decision, if Nigerians decide to make that concrete decision of deviating from the norm, we can actually put an upstart into the highest office in the land. You can vote anybody anywhere. Mm. But if you don't have that enabling electoral environment, you may not be able to do that. So we are calling on authorities to complement the effort towards national event by allowing for free and fair election. Mm-hmm. But that left to Nigerians to now make these choices, not in line with the decision, I must insist.
But
pragmatic politics. What does the person have to offer? Go for it and do it. I have a social contract with the person. If the person breaches it, you can hold him accountable.
Yeah.
It cannot be the silver bullet that will usher us into the promised land. But what will happen is, it might help. You know, that person will regret. And maybe by the time we consolidate on a democratic culture that is no longer based on these disruptive tendencies of ethnicity and religion, we will now begin to have a more decent leadership recruitment process that might eventually evolve into what we desire.
Well, we'll continue to hope for the best. You know, sometimes when we talk, it takes the people who know to also get the process right and do all of the selecting right that you talked about. I mean, yesterday I was heading home and that Banex traffic with three traffic police officers there with the traffic light. And yes, there was so much chaos. People were not orderly. And in my head, I was saying, if we can't conduct ourselves with something as basic as this, what's the guarantee that we're going to see clear enough to even get the right people in office? It just starts to look really like the people we have high up there are just a reflection of us. Because then the police had to stop three of them, stop three vehicles. Taxi decided, oh, let me speed pass when there's a traffic light that's telling you to stop and traffic officers telling you stop. And then an SUV is doing the same. So it's not just taxi, SUV, everybody's just acting all crazy out on the road. So sometimes you look at our behavior as a people and it tells you also that what we see high up there is just, you know, somewhat a reflection of
who we are
in terms of our lack of discipline and proper conduct. And I'm not generalizing, but it's disturbing when you see a large number of people doing it. No, also,
it's a reality. But that's why those that are high up there cannot be called leaders. Leaders must now show example on how to do things properly. And so those SUVs, for example, shouldn't be seen breaking traffic laws. Yeah. If you have a country where those in authority lead by example, by obeying traffic laws, by obeying rules and regulations, and all the codes of conduct that should govern our lives, when you see them taking leadership, taking ownership of this process and obeying them to the letter, Nigerians will then naturally fall into line. You see, you need leadership to mobilize, inspire, and galvanize people towards the right direction. And when Nigerians begin to see the benefit of being law-abiding, of being less or not corrupt, and see the benefit by way of improvement in welfare, security, and orderliness, there will be an incentive now to be law-abiding. But in Nigeria, if you are law-abiding, sometimes you are the receiving end. Yes, it means you are not smart enough to take advantage of the system to get what you want. You go to a petrol station, I'm not a saint here. You queue up diligently from morning to night. And somebody who knows somebody within the police station can just come in through the exit gate and get from before you. So why should anybody now be on the queue?
Why should anybody?
I do this. What I've just said, I'm not innocent of it. I'm guilty of it. I'm only honest enough to admit that sometimes The system simply makes it impossible to be law-abiding. And so that's why nobody sanctioned anybody for the kind of unruly behavior you just described. Nobody can. Because you don't have the moral authority to sanction anybody. When you have to uphold the law, enforce the law,
you're also guilty of doing the same thing.
Leading, you know, through the bad example of breaking the law. Yeah, so we need a national rebirth, essentially.
It's really a vicious circle. Talking about national rebirth, we're going to also look at the political parties, their structures, and how the flag bearers and the leadership emerge. And then the PDP, APC, you mentioned in passing when you were talking about it, also grappling with their internal issues and trying to sort themselves out ahead of the 2023 election. Now, former Vice President Atiku Abubakar, who we know is one strong contender within the PDP, has indicated all the interest that can be indicated, is really worried about the PDP and saying if they don't win the 2023 presidency, that the party might go extinct, the party might die. Just a few days back, we were talking about Wike Obaseki, who is your father to Shuaibo, and all the bickering as to who owns the party, who doesn't own the party. How dare you speak? We just brought you, you're hanging by the thread within this political party, and so you shouldn't just be braggadocious about your position. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, we have that going on. Some people say it's just a small issue within the party. They will sort it out. But you're also looking at that opposition party as a whole to saying, are they getting their act right? No, 1 minute they will say, yeah, we're coming to save Nigeria. And a lot of Nigerians on social media, PDP, APC has failed us. It just feels like it's just a role reversal of what we saw in 2015. Ahead of 2015, PDP has failed us, we need APC. And now they say APC has failed us, we need PDP. Going back to a vomit, it feels like. But do you think if PDP does not scale through and hold this nation in 2023, that's the end of them?
Yes, I think so. Or, well, maybe speaking metaphorically, it might diminish the party a lot.
Ah.
Because the truth is, Nigerians have come to the conclusion that there is no difference essentially between you and your arch rival, the APC. And the reason the party might die, or rather the reason the party might lose the next election, it's not because the APC is doing so well. It is not because the PDP has not been able to come up with an alternative governance model that Nigerians can actually bet upon. So let me say this. In a presidential system of government, in a country that is actually a federation, where you have state governors, or you have states, you have state governors, you have legislators and all, you know, you have different layers of government. The best way to actually oppose a government, the best way to do opposition, is to test, practice, demonstrate, exemplify your own alternative model of good governance in the states you control. And this is something the PDP has not done since 2015. For example, if the PDP says it's criticizing the president or the central government for certain kind of things,
yeah,
we want to see the opposite. That's which we are preaching. Practice in your state. That is the best way to oppose in a federal system of government. That's also presidential. That is what we will see is the example you are showing in your own state, your spheres of influence. Now the question is, how is the PDP radically different from the APC at the sub-national levels? I do not see a difference. In fact, the PDP committed class suicide whenever it is seen coming together with the APC, something that they got at the Forum of Nigerian Governors, opposing certain legislations or directives that aims to, one, either separate powers properly at the state level and give autonomy to local governments. Is there anything that really differentiates both parties? All governors behave in the same manner. They have emasculated all other organs of government or arms of government in the state, and they rule like, you know, emperors. It's something across party lines. So the PDP has not been able to, in the last 7 years, provide an alternative governance model in their own states that they control. Secondly, as we speak today, Nigeria is practically on the verge of economic collapse as we speak. I mean, from aviation sector to energy security that's pervading every facet of our lives, from manufacturing to even our homes, everywhere. I mean, I don't need to go over and over.
Yeah.
What you are and I are facing, I mean, everybody listening knows what we are facing today. Much as we want to blame the APC for not living up to expectation, but the question is, beyond releasing statements criticizing the APC, mm. but remain on their own without the people having an interrogating, what do they really start from? Mm. I've listened to, those that are speaking from the PDP criticizing the APC. I've not seen any, ingenious ideas on how to solve this problem, really. Mm. I've not. Even the top force are talking about, all we see is a conglomeration of likely angry people that feel left out in any of these parties coming together. All they are saying is the APC has failed, the APC has failed, the APC has failed. But okay, what do you want to do going forward? I've not heard anything radically different from what you've been hearing. And let me restate this again. We got here today because you refused to do a few basic things. Mm. Number one, until you have a truly, truly united and socially cohesive nation that is well integrated across border functions like a modern nation state, you can't talk about national development. It was yesterday at Southern Center, we had a policy session, and I was presenting on national development as a sub theme. I'm sure a lot of people are expecting us to bring up, macroeconomic policy, yeah. suggestions, data and figures. But the plank of my submission was, well, for Nigeria to actually start the journey towards national development is for us to begin first the process of becoming a nation. It's as simple as that.
And people will be wondering, 60 plus years after, exactly. You're still talking about this.
It's
always
so simplistic. But people first understand that before Turkey, today that is a major exporter and an economic powerhouse, and it's emerging from Eastern Europe, before Turkey became what it is, they first achieved a nationhood, a Turkish nation.
Yeah.
Kemal Atatürk carried out a Turkinization policy in Turkey to blunt all other micro-identities and created an egalitarian, secular, and pluralist society out of a predominantly Muslim state of Turkey that was a legacy state of the old Ottoman Empire. It was deliberate because if you do not set the basis, the basic foundation, no policy will work for you. You could actually go left or right, it doesn't matter. What is important is first, you have to be a nation. Nigeria today is far from being a nation. So I've not seen any of the parties that have actually admitted or come to this self-enlightened realization that there's a need first to create a nation. You have to start the process of nation building out of the multiplicity of micro ethnicities in Nigeria that are working at cross purposes. We need to start the process. It's an all-encompassing process that must be deliberately driven and backed up by purposeful administrative procedures and legislations. Secondly, for a developing economy like Nigeria, I will not stop saying this. The fallacy of government having no business in business is one that must be thrown out of the window as quickly as possible. There is nowhere in the world, I do not know of any country in the world that is prosperous, that the government is not involved in business. I do not know. From Washington to Paris to London to New York to Riyadh, name it, to Tokyo to Beijing. The primary function of government is business, because the only business of government is doing business. And any government that cannot do business has no business being in government in the first place. It is essential. Your business is to provide prosperity and security for citizens. And so government must be hands-on, and you cannot, especially as a developing economy, a third world economy for that matter, you can't abdicate the responsibility of means of production
completely to the private sector.
It is not done anywhere. I don't know where it is done. Because the government has a social responsibility to provide security and welfare. And in modern economics, energy, power, iron and steel are the building blocks of any economy. And so it's not something that you can subject to profitability in terms of naira and kobo, or pounds, dollars, and sterling. It is a government thing. So even when you have private sector people participating, government must have a dominant role to forestall what we are facing today. So it is inexcusable that governments at various levels do not have the means to refine petrol in Nigeria, even as an oil-producing country. And I want to reiterate my call that how come the Niger Delta states, that are actually mostly controlled by the PDP, have not thought it wise to have refineries? Look at River State. The other day, the governor of Rivers went after illegal refiners.
Yeah.
Because of pollution and other related issues. Fine, no problem. But the preponderance of illegal refiners in Rivers tells you something. That is what they have as a comparative economic advantage. Because they are endowed with natural resources, hydrocarbons, crude oil. And so it is natural that the people will have the tendency to want to provide services in this direction. So it is not enough to just dislodge so-called legal refiners.
And not replace it with a structure.
One would have expected the River State government and other governments in the Niger Delta to look at how to convert this enormous economic advantage into prosperity by investing in that sector. Do you know that if Rivers today decides to fill in the gap of providing PMS, refined PMS, for us to look at consumption, the 9 oil producing states in Nigeria can create millions of jobs by simply deepening their involvement in this sector. Imagine aviation fuel, PMS, diesel, all the associated products from distilled hydrocarbon. That's enough. They don't need to diversify beyond oil and gas and petrochemicals. It's enough for them to generate billions of dollars in export and billions of naira in local consumption.
You know what you're saying, some people would even argue the same for energy generally, with even electricity, to saying state, we need to adjust our laws to the point where states should be able to power up their own environment because of this national grid.
The proposed legislation of National Foundation that says they should be allowed to generate, transmit, and distribute. Yeah. This should have been done long time ago. Rather than going through the way of NIPP, which have simply allowed states to generate, distribute, transmit, and distribute as well. So that is something that should be taken for granted. A railway should also come between the purview of states. It should just transfer these states into the concurrent list. It's as simple as that. Let states and federal government participate side by side. And if by the time states take over fully, the federal government will simply hands off. So we need the states to be deep, but we're not seeing a policy direction in this regard from the opposition PDP, for example, as an alternative to what the APC is not offering as we speak. And so I'm thinking that we need to evolve a consensus about these two issues, the role of government one in business, and how to unify Nigeria enough to evolve a pan-Nigerian development plan that ties every component part of Nigeria to an export competitive economy.
So these two critical areas, uniting the country and government being involved in business.
It's something we must
federal, state, and local government levels.
At this point, we all need to go to work. Governors need to stay in their states because if we want to diversify an economy and make it export competitive for a country like Nigeria, states will have to specialize in their areas of economic advantage. So for oil producing states, it's natural going to hydrocarbon production and petrochemicals. So that from this state, Nigeria will be a net exporter of those products and associated products. Now for the agro-allied bets in this country, to do the same thing. Let the state specialize and deepen their involvement in agriculture. If their own national endowment is agriculture, for states that are manufacturing, the same thing. For states that are tourism, haven of tourism like Cross River and others, it's the same thing. The states must be involved. They must invest part of their monthly allocation into these ventures in order to bring in more revenue by way of profitability of these ventures. So we must do this because we have no option. The neoliberal tendencies that has actually given our economic priorities since 1999 has led us to a point where today, if those are owned GenCos are not to actually open that, we are done for it. It's not that important, PMS said, they are no longer important. It's over for all of us. And so where does that leave us? How do you tie energy security to individual care the fate of a country. You tie the energy security of a whole nation to a few individuals that are nothing but oligarchs. You see, we created an oligarchy by embarking on this fallacious neoliberal economic policy that says government has no business in business. I understand that before 1999, state-owned enterprises collapsed. Why did they collapse? Corruption, inefficiency of public sector. So to correct that problem was not to privatize. It was to first fix public sector. And as long as we run away from fixing the public sector, we will not be out of this problem. We must fix the public
sector. I was going to ask you, how many lifetimes would it take to actually address this? Because this is taking us also to a root cause problem.
Yes.
The corruption, public services,
and on its own, the bureaucracy and everything. National unity. The only way to banish corruption is to unite the country. Do you know why Nigeria is corrupt? Simple. You have over 500 micro-ethnic nationalities struggling for Nigeria's internal resources. And so, corrupt tendencies, such as nepotism, cronyism, favoritism, influence peddling, all of these corrupt tendencies are legitimate tools, cultural legitimate tools that are sanctioned by tradition and ratified by religion to extract from the common pool to the various sectional tendencies. This is the root of Nigeria's corruption because we're not united enough to go outside and compete with other countries for global resources. So we must have a projection towards bringing everybody together first. Look, we keep making examples of Rwanda in a lot of events we attend together, for example, making examples of Rwanda. The media is often blamed for what happened in Rwanda.
Too, yeah.
And I've always disputed that fact. Rwanda didn't go to war because of the media. No. There was already a problem arising from identity problem in Rwanda. Rwanda was deeply divided along tribal lines. And the politics of Rwanda was heavily dependent on tribalism. It was the tribalism that boiled over into the carnage you saw in 1994. So the media that was actually calling out people to go and kill fellow citizens based on ethnic differences was simply a function of a deep-seated animosity against that ethnic group that had existed for over a century. So the role the media played was simply re-emphasizing or echoing what people felt in their hearts and minds because of the deep-seated animosity arising from disunity along tribal lines. And to solve that problem, Paul Kagame, who emerged as leader of Rwanda after 1994 genocide and civil war, didn't banish the media. You know what he did? He banished tribalism first. In Rwanda today, it is a crime to identify along any tribal grouping. No, it is Rwanda that is our identity. As long as Rwanda has been able to evolve a national consensus about national development, and why they have made progress more than any other country within that sub-region. And that's why they are making progress in terms of law and order. They are not there yet. It is not perfect.
Yeah.
There is a lot of work to be done. But they appear to have transcended the level of, mere animalistic existence among other African countries. So you do not see them falling under the radar in certain indices of development, or underdevelopment, rather. So they've been able to, at least, identify or rather resolve the question of national identity, and they are moving as a nation towards certain levels of prosperity. So you see Rwanda engaging more and more in the global stage. They're becoming a force to be reckoned with, even in Africa and beyond. But the case of Nigeria and some other countries like us, DRC, South Sudan, and Co., is that we are still struggling to evolve beyond a near animalistic existence. Because we are like in a subhuman environment. We have people think along tribal lines. I cannot judge you with the content of your character in law without looking at
my ethnicity.
And why it is subhuman is if we are human, you will realize that blood can be transfused from ethnic member A to ethnic member B depending.
On the blood type.
That is, blood group is not dependent on ethnicity because it is not a natural phenomenon. It is a creation, it is a superficial creation. But we've taken it so deeply that somebody calls himself an Igbo man, a Hausa man, a Yoruba man. I would rather say I'm an Igbo-speaking man because I was born into an Igbo-speaking environment and culture. I am a Yoruba-speaking Nigerian. I am a Hausa speaking Nigerian. I'm a Tiv, Idoma, etc. speaking Nigerian. In fact, I'm an advocate of one thing. National integration is embedded in our constitution. The need for national integration. That's what the constitution also understood, that if you don't have integration, you can't develop. You can't.
Well, maybe some people, that's why they agree that it's deployed by certain people to ensure they continue to create and widen that fault line.
I'm saying, for the purpose of
another strategy of dividing.
Cake is exhausted. So can we not
We've run out of it.
We've run out of the cake now. This first scarcity has affected everybody.
Oh, yes. I mean, aviation fuel. Problem. You can't fly.
You can't fly.
By road. You don't have
pay $5 million ransom. So, you see, it has, the chickens have come home to roost. So can we now agree and say, look, we need to move away from this complete nonsense that we've been doing? And I'm saying, the PDP has not shown leadership in this direction. They should have been at the forefront of saying, look, we've been in power before.
Yeah.
Now we are in opposition. From our experience, we think we need to move the country in this direction. And this is how we intend to achieve it. So if you give us your mandate, we are going to do so within certain timelines to move us from this depth of economic misery.
So the campaign is not just that, oh, that party has failed you.
No, because we're coming back. You know, a frigid woman had actually became frigid because she had been jilted severally by different lovers. So, you know, it will take more than just normal toasting to Arusa. You have to go extra mile. Instead of coming, you have to jump protocol. You have to bring the gift ahead of the toasting. You have to like demonstrate for the next 1 year that you are sincere.
That you're the real deal.
That you're the real deal. It's like you have to go extra mile to convince her. First, you can give it a chance. That's how Nigerians are today. So, what I said in 2015, we felt okay. The problem was PDP and APC. I'll come and take. We are no longer that naive. We now know that okay, beyond the rhetoric, beyond the name calling, what are you offering? So I'm saying, the PDP can actually convert the incumbency disadvantage of the APC to the advantage only if they can articulate and begin to demonstrate these articulated policies in their states. I mean, Kogi is an APC state, for example. Edo is a PDP state. If the people in Okene, for example, that is just next door to Opela, I mean, there is practically no boundary between Okene and Opela. It's almost contiguous. It's contiguous, rather. If people in Okene are seeing roads constructed into Opela, down to the boundary of Okene, and you can see that this construction was stopped because it's not in the jurisdiction. And you see schools constructed in Opela. You see hospitals constructed in Opela. You see electricity in Opela. You see security for Opela farmers and hunters. The man in Okene wants to buy into
whatever they're doing in Opela.
That party that has done this for these people. You don't even need to campaign. They will vote and contribute yams and potatoes and grains to your candidate to come and just do what you are saying.
Come and replicate your good work here.
Why are Nigerians all over the country so wowed by Governor Zulu? Just the little is done. That's all. You see Igbo people, you see Yorubas, everybody across the country say, we need a leader like Zulu. That can rule Nigeria. He's one of the most popular figures today because of the modest achievement he's made in Borno. So imagine when a party now, you know, internalizes this philosophy and is seen demonstrating or acting in that direction. You don't need to do much to convince Nigeria. They just can see now. They will simply come. When your legislators in the assembly are distinguishable from the others by their integrity. But for that, they go for oversight. Nobody pays their bill. They pay their bills themselves. They go. Even if it means making minority recommendations, but they're always in the interest of Nigeria and constitutionalism. We'll begin to make that difference, we'll begin to set in, okay, these people are known for this distinct character apart from the ruling party. Mm. As we speak, it is not distinguishable. It is not really.
Sadly. Really sad.
So the PDP is its own biggest undoing. You can't win this election by just rhetoric. Because left to Nigerians, if they cannot make a clear distinction between the PDP and the APC, one, the people will not enamor the PDP with people power enough to challenge all of the federal might that might be deployed in the election. And so people will go out and vote along money lines. Okay, the highest bidder pays.
Exactly.
Because I'm not expecting anything from any of you.
Because honestly, you talk to the average Nigerians on the street and they now recognize that we're dealing with almost the same crop of people filtering themselves into this party.
So that is the tragedy of our democracy. So if democracy fails in Nigeria, God forbid, it to be blamed on the political class that have refused to translate democracy into dividends by way of improved well-being, welfare, and security for the Nigerian people. So people have been to question the relevance of democracy. Why are we wasting monies? Why are we wasting our time doing this every 4 years? Only to enthrone people that will come and feast on our common patrimony and leave us with nothing or near nothing. So something has to change. And as a democracy, to change the status quo is to apply more democracy. I've had conversations with people across party line at the highest level, and I'm telling them, don't you see that it is your own interest for Nigeria to be good? You won't have this need to acquire so much to satisfy political hangers on. Fix the system. Let people have access to quality public education, primary, secondary. Let people have quality access to quality healthcare, at least primary healthcare. If there's some of these things in place, you don't need to do much. Anyone who now calls you and say, I'm here sick, I'm going to be the hospital that will already make provisions for you. You will have your rest, you have your peace of mind, and everybody lives long and in good health as well. But you have taken so much from the system into your own pockets, and you are now burdened by the excessive demands from your people, friends and family. They have to satisfy. And the national cake is severely depleted. That you don't have enough any longer.
I mean, the fact that we're going borrowing seriously to even pay something as...
more money. Tell us you can't pay. For China to say you can't pay more, so I'm not going to borrow you. So we need to go back to the basics. I don't know of any country, please tell me if you know of any, that has developed without first resolving the question of national identity, social cohesion, and unity. I don't know of any country, I don't know. So we'll come here and talk about stop being nepotistic, stop dividing us the more. This is what we are actually talking about. But you see, when you rule a country along sectional lines, nobody benefits, not even your own section of the country. No, you can't benefit. Because you can't develop a country along sectional lines. It has to be integrated for the purpose of export competitiveness. That is, what are you offering to the world? What are you offering in the global state? What are they paying you for? What is it? Let me say this. People look at America and think America just became great by being America. No.
Well, if you read your history, you
America
know they have to put in a lot of work.
What we are saying now, the fact that America has a universal principle of citizenship that allows you from any part of the world to be a citizen is what has made Apple. Apple has a net worth that is said to be in excess of Africa's GDP combined. Apple as a company. Apple was founded by Steve Jobs, an adopted child from Syria.
Oh, yeah?
He became a citizen of America, and he created a value for Americans that has added to the wealth of Americans. How about Facebook, for example? Who created Facebook? Mark Zuckerberg, of Jewish ancestry. How about Zoom? When the world went into lockdown, Zoom came to the rescue. Zoom was developed by a Chinese American.
Well, America is like a potpourri of all ethnicity
and
race.
Most nations are moving in that direction. So it is so bad that if America can be a potpourri of different, like a microcosm of the entire world in one, what makes them the greatest country in the world? That is the reason why they are the greatest country in the whole world. Recently, President Joe Biden said, the Supreme Court doesn't look like America enough. So I need to put a black woman there to reflect the character of America. Deliberate and purposeful mechanisms of nation building is what he displayed there. Now, how come we that are monoracial? Look at you and I, we have almost the same complexion, even though I'm darker than you. And we still see each other as too different to be one. When people have transcended the barrier of race, that is, you know, you see a white man, you see a black man, and there's the physical basis to one to think is different from the other.
To see the distinction.
So people have been able to overcome the barrier of race to form a United States of America. And we've seen the benefit in that. How come we are not able to harmonize
the United States of Nigeria?
Even when our history suggests that we are one people, we are a super tribe that is splintered along just various, not different, various ethnic groups. It tells you that we are not operating at full human capacity yet. We are subhuman because it's in the jungle. You see animals that are walking on all fours, thinking themselves too different to cohabit peacefully, and they prey on each other. Yeah. And because they prey on each other, we the human beings are walking on four legs, on two legs. We go in and hunt and pick them without them being able to come together to ward off the human predators. That is how Nigerians are today.
Wow. So it feels like every other story about energy crisis and everything, all of it is embedded in the conversation we've talked about.
We continue to talk about this
age-old problem over and over if we don't fix certain basics.
We want a consensus. I don't know what we do at our own small level at Luke Sterra Leadership Foundation. We have used every channel we have. We do trainings. We bring and say, look at you. You are Ijaw, you are Ishekiri, you are also. We are one people. Go back and coexist as one and come up with common interests that is in line with your security, your individual economies, and your environmental security. And use that as a basis for political engagement. Don't allow anybody to come and preach to you and say, you know, you and I, we are from the same place, so if I get this power, the highest thing we can do for you is to give you SA, 100,000 naira a month, and I propose the rest for himself, his family, and his concubines. He cannot do anything more than that for you.
At the end of the day, you benefit nothing.
You benefit nothing. Yeah. That is the lesson to learn from identity politics that have been a pain on our democracy since 1999.
I feel like we'll continue to talk about this. NOA takes it up. Everyone in their own quarter continue to preach this message till our subconscious mind accepts it for us to have one collective vision.
Suggestion, if you do not mind, because you're part of a very important issue. Any serious government should engage NOA. And get NOA to partner with the entertainment industry in Nigeria, particularly in Hollywood, Kannywood, and all the world, so that this thing can become an underlying philosophy in all of our movies and entertainment material. So that when you watch a Nigerian film, it naturally detribalizes you and makes you a better Nigerian, because it shows you in visual and entertaining, you know, terms, how we are one people and the benefit of being united. So
every now and again you see that campaign message on TV, particularly if you're looking at national TV. Nigeria, we are one. We wear the green, white, green, and stuff like that.
It's just locally. The most effective way is through Nollywood. Let Nigerians...
And perhaps what is taught in school, because it's important also.
What I'm talking about Nollywood is, normally in the school curriculum, social studies, civil studies, is already there. It only needs to be enhanced. But we want people to subconsciously begin to migrate from being a tribesman to a citizen through entertainment. People consume Nollywood. And these films do not need to be embellished with government imprints, no. It's like a guided collaboration between the government and the entertainment industry through NOA, where the government will finance films that will actually be blockbusters and they get their money. A whole collaboration.
I'm glad you brought the part of finance because I know South Korea, the government had to invest because they wanted to promote the Korean culture to the entire world. So the investment is there on the part of the government.
The biggest investor in Hollywood is the American government. In fact, the Pentagon has a department in Hollywood where they show the American minds, of course, the propaganda movies.
Yeah.
But at the same time, they also show you, you know, the American dream, how you can live and realize the American dream as an American citizen. The imperatives of human rights, liberty, dignity, and guess what? Integration. These days, you see what American movies these days, there's this deliberate attempt to integrate Americans. So you see somebody who looks like a nation, who speaks, of course, good American English, being asked by a white man, where are you from? And she says, I'm from Georgia. It's like trying to send a message that I can be Chinese and be from Georgia. I don't speak from China. Because my citizenship makes me a Georgian American. And you that is a white man, you have the right to begin to ask me where I am from. So in Nigeria today, it's still not possible to be Igbo and Kano, or Hausa and Anambra. It's still not possible. How do you expect to develop? So I think as we move towards the next election, we have to go back to debate the foundation. Is this what I'm start saying? APC has failed. PDP. Nobody needs to tell you.
Is that enough time, Majid, if we're being realistic, to actually fix this thing? Because it took years and decades. It would need some time of proper education and awareness to unlearn and relearn. Because if you're saying between now 2023 election, I try to be optimistic, but I don't see how that's going
to
work.
The process, that is getting a leadership that is enlightened on this matter. This is the way to go.
Okay.
This is the direction to go. And we need to start a painstaking journey. We need to understand that if you mismanage 1 naira of public fund, you have distorted an entire economic ecosystem that will create poverty and misery. You see, we need to start. I've seen too many examples. I know I'm saying this. We need to start that deliberate process. There's no country that has developed, none that has prospered, without without first achieving national cohesion. I don't know if it was the story of the United Arab Emirates and Oman. Yes. Oman became independent before the United Arab Emirates. Oman was supposed to actually incorporate the territory down known as United Arab Emirates. The Omani monarchy said no. This was actually disunited. They are going to disturb my country. I don't want it to be part of me. And it was only when the Emiratis decided to come together and start fighting over themselves, start fighting over internal spaces and internal resources, that they stopped being just ordinary fishermen and became an economic powerhouse, because they came together, harnessed their potentials, and attracted the entire world into the Emirates. The whole world. It's like a common front, and we attracted the world into Emirates through tourism. Do you know they have a wildlife park now, safari park in Dubai? They created an artificial...
Dubai is so designed to give you every form of entertainment and all that you desire.
So that they needed to tap from the world. So all of you that go to Dubai, I know, I'm sure the LFC, the billionaires go to Dubai all the time for holidays. When you go there, you pour in money into the economy.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
that one that is used to.
Oh, yeah.
If you go to Dubai, you see those Emiratis, the original Emiratis, they look so fresh. If you look at them, you wonder, is it the same God that created you? It's the same God, though. They are not always like this, but because we are pouring money there.
Oh, they are chilling.
And so it's for that money that they're not using to make them chill. So you go to Dubai Mall in the evenings. The exclusive areas is just where you see the Emiratis.
I was going to say that half the time you don't even see them, except in the evenings when you go to places like that.
You are donating to them.
Yeah.
They made a place attractive for you to come and pour in the money. It's as simple as that. So how come we've not been able to transcend to that level? It's because we've not put our house in order.
And it's showing so strongly. I mean, yesterday we were talking about immigration frowning at how our passport has gone below Chad and Niger. I mean, how many countries can you really go visa-free as a country? So all of this is tying together to so that we are dropping in standard in so many.